Welcome to today's episode, where I discussed e-commerce innovation and growth with Neil Twa, the founder of Voltage Digital, which launches, operates, and acquires e-commerce brands. Neil has also wrote the book Almost Automated Income with FBA, where you will learn how to create your own almost automated Amazon e-commerce business in a short period of time without sacrificing your lifestyle. Neil shares his profound insights from over two decades of experience in online entrepreneurship and e-commerce innovation. We'll uncover how Neil transitioned from the early days of dial-up internet to pioneering e-commerce strategies that have dramatically reshaped how businesses operate online. Neil will walk us through his journey of developing and leading Voltage, revealing the pivotal decision and strategies that helped scale his venture to remarkable heights. Expect to learn about the challenges and triumphs of managing a multi-million dollar e-commerce businesses, the evolution of Amazon's marketplace, and how emerging technologies are transforming the digital commerce landscape. Neil also shares invaluable advice for entrepreneurs looking to carve out their own success stories in the competitive world of e-commerce. So whether you're an inspiring entrepreneur, an established business owner, or simply curious about the future of online businesses, this episode with Neil Twa is packed with actionable insights and forward-thinking strategies. So let's get started and unlock the secrets to building and thriving e-commerce empires with Neil Twa at Voltage. Welcome to the Ecom Pulse, your heartbeat to the world of e-commerce. I'm your host, Eitan Kotter. Join us as we meet with industry leaders, marketing experts, and the innovative minds behind the tech that is shaping the e-commerce future. So plug in, gear up, and get ready for a pulse-pounding journey into the heart of e-commerce. Hi, Neil. How are you? How's your day?
I'm doing great today, Eitan. How are you, sir?
Doing well. Thank you so much for your time. I know you live in a country. I think it's a great place to start. So tell us more about where you live, how your day-to-day is going. I think it's really interesting, right?
Yeah, well, long story short, I would not have ever expected to own 50 acres in the country. I wouldn't have expected to own five. We lived on like 0.5 when I was a kid growing up in a cul-de-sac in the hills of Oregon. And so since then, you know, as I got out into the world and saw a bigger space and lived for a while, I met a country girl who, you know, family had 600 acres and did farming and she'd go out and play on that. So when we got together in life and eventually she said, you know, it's time for us to move out of the neighborhood we were living in. It's time for us to get some acres. And she said, we got to get 20 acres. And I'm like, 20 acres? I had no idea how to manage 20 acres. I grew up in a cul-de-sac. I've lived in cities. I lived in New York downtown near Fulton and Manhattan and Battery Park. And I'm like, man, I don't know anything about owning farming and acreage. And so now I have 50 acres. And guess what? It does not feel like enough. Like it runs out. Wow. It's like I need another 50 or more because by the time the fun gets going, but the trucks gear up and the ATVs are going, you run out of land. And I'm like, well, I need more land then. So it's been a long road. And yeah, we do. Okay. We homestead, we garden, we have a 100 by 50 foot square foot heritage seed garden. I've been out chainsawing the last 3 days because we had to cut down a really large tree out near the house. And because of that, you know, I'm going through and cutting it all out and been working on that. And I'm not quite done yet because it's a monstrous tree. but we do a lot out here to have fun, ride horses, play and games and just enjoy the country life. It's been a blessing. About 10 years
Amazing.
Now. Out here
so
in the country,
that's the right atmosphere for e-commerce consulting and growth and acquisition.
Clarity, cleanliness of the water, the environment,
the clutter, no focus.
Yeah, I can just check out behind the technology and just disappear in the woods and, you know, enjoy the environment and nature.
Wow, amazing. Great. So, Neil, let's put things into context. I think it's important for the audience to know you better. So, how did you started in e-commerce? And
Well, the long story non-boring part is while I turned 48, it doesn't seem like I am 48 because the world and the online and everything has moved so fast. I have a young family. And so I forget how quickly some of these conversations translate backwards into things like, you know, I was on the AOL boards when I was 16 with my friend's computer, you know, doing dial-up. Like that's how fast this has changed. Dick Tracy and the watches and the iWatches were like, you know, crazy things we thought would never happen. And, you know, I can make phone calls on my watch. And long story, you know, I got into technology young, loved the ideas and concepts of it, and really just got involved in it to the point where in my corporate life, I got into Sprint right when the first mobile phone was launching, got to ride that for 5 years. And then IBM picked me up and I spent almost 5 years in IBM at the high tech world. Doing knowledge management, latent semantic search engines, artificial intelligence, communications and networking and business around creating just-in-time information. for businesses. And, you know, 2007 came around and they said, hey, you want to go to Argentina? And I said, no. And they said, great, take your early retirement. And I was like, well, looks like it's time for me to start a business. I'd always wanted to do that. In fact, I had a little side hustle hobby business on the side. It was called Killer Game Servers. And we had about 20 servers running out of Texas where the codecs, the voice codecs were used that we developed to put us together in communication so that when people were gaming in a multiplayer gaming, they could talk with each other. Because believe it or not, that wasn't built into the games yet. Mm-hmm. And so we had that system and I had that whole entrepreneurial thing, just knowing I wanted to do that. And so I took the catalyst of that and kind of bridged that into my, you know, new environment in my life. And about 17 years ago, have been in a multi set of businesses, both high and low, developed systems and technology and lead generation and e-commerce and brands and physical products. And all this time, really found my love in the world of e-commerce and the physical private label product world. And have spent the better part of more than a decade developing out those systems across Amazon FBA, Shopify, now TikTok shops, and just omni-channel, multi-channel strategies for moving private label brands into the mass market.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, this industry is like, if you start an issue, if you start with this, there's no way to get out, right? I mean,
it's pretty hard. You get
Why do you think people are so excited about this?
Well, I mean, for me, you know, the ADHD entrepreneurial short, you know, fuse kind of mindset that I have has always wanted to try, test, develop, push the boundaries and see how far I could make things go. The creativity side of me, the business and music background that I have, and literally went to school on a full ride music scholarship, playing trumpet and jazz and classical, and just the creativity of business. I always thought about it as being moldable, adaptable, changeable. People think there's a specific, you know, stay in the lines kind of mentality. And I'm like, well, let's see where the lines really are. And so for that reason, into brand development and online marketing and the physical development of products and movement to market, there are so many different ways you can skin that cat, so many different brands you can approach and so many different avatars you can attack. It's a constant, never-ending change opportunity to do and test and try new things and develop new things all within this one ecosystem of e-commerce. And that's kind of why I fell in love with it. And I'll be at it for the next 20 years. There's just so much to do and change and develop. I don't have to go off and do new things in new areas. I can stay kind of focused in this area, and that makes it fun for me.
Exactly. I think experimentation is like the main theme here, right?
Yeah.
You know, experiment and move fast, you know, break things.
Pivot.
You know, pivot. That's like one of the things that is in the core of everything, right? Both on the back end side and also on the front end side of the business.
Yeah, it's much easier to do that as an e-commerce entrepreneurial business owner. Now, I know there's people who call themselves entrepreneurs. I just think that when I was an entrepreneur, I was still in the stage of trying to discover what made sense to me. So I was testing and trying the business models. Now I'm a business owner who in my business, as I own Voltage and the companies and the holdings and everything that's underneath it, gives me the opportunity to play entrepreneur in new areas of business development and lines of business within my business. So I've kind of gone past that, if it makes sense. It's a stepping stone, if you will.
Sure.
And in that business development of our own companies and helping our clients build companies to exit, you know, now we're in the mergers and acquisition stage of this growth, because it's kind of an evolution as you move forward. Acquisition and purchasing, competition through acquisition is a great model for building out, you know, and developing out faster. And so now we're really into acquisition mode more. We were really into acquisition mode in the Amazon aggregator space days. Are you familiar with this at all? Or maybe your audience is? Yeah. So when we formed Voltage Portfolios in 2019, it was to go raise capital to be an aggregator. We saw the opportunity, we went after it. By the time capital raised for us had finally fully occurred by 2021, we had about $100 million in verbal commitments that were going to paper to basically purchase roughly 53 companies, roughly. The market had shifted dramatically. We watched a lot of other capital push in. Billions of dollars had moved. And in that space and time, we realized they were buying market share at 40% or more above the real revenue or EBITDA valuation of that company. They were buying closer to multiples of revenue. And we suddenly realized this is a bad place to be.
Sure.
And they are just acquiring for
acquisition.
Lucky you.
Lucky timing, I think, right?
Well, lucky timing and a very blessed partner relationship with someone for 11 years who saw the weeds and the forest through the trees, saw the numbers and came and said, hey, we got to pause this for a second. We got to stop. Yeah. Like, hold up. Look at these numbers.
Sure.
And when he did that, I was like, well, crap. I just wasted 18 months of my life because we got to stop. Mm-hmm. And so we did. And of course, the market was completely overvalued. And now the capitulation, consolidation, and bankruptcies are occurring for those companies because they just went out and spent stupid money everywhere. And I've had a couple of those investors come back and say, thank you so much for not getting us involved. And I've had a couple who were torqued off that we didn't get involved anyways. Imagine that. So
Yeah. I mean, losing early is very important, right?
I think so. That, fail fast.
That's a lesson, obviously, for everyone.
Yeah. And that huge capital raise. So that was a bloodbath, but it's right-sized to my point. Sure. Now that we're looking at more of the acquisition this year, we see, you know, opportunities for a lot of companies. Even the aggregators are trying to sell off some of their brands. I got a broker relationship the other day connected through one of the aggregators is trying to dump a bunch of their brands. And we're looking at some pennies on the dollar opportunities as long as they, you know, didn't screw the market share up and really cause a lot of problems within the brand that can't be rediscovered. We're looking at a couple of them for potential acquisition to take them over because we know that they just simply operated them very poorly in the market.
Yeah. So I want to use this opportunity to maybe dive in a little bit of your acquisition criteria and how do you create valuation. Maybe talk about the general, you know, atmosphere now in the market for that.
Everybody's different, you know, and it's one of the harder segments of the marketplace right now because there are a few aggregators that do want to start reacquiring recently now that they've gone through a kind of a change in the last 12 months. And a lot want that 1 million to 3 million in the SDE or seller discretionary earnings space or EBITDA, depending upon how you look at the purchase decisions of the business. So we're looking in the same kind of space, but I have a network now. So I'm trying to establish a number of deals off market or through my market relationship channels that to get real about, you know, real valuations of these companies, not some of the overinflated valuations we're still seeing on some of these channels. Amazon single channel valuations at 3.2 to 3.5 really have to see a much higher EBITDA than they're showing on some of these books because it's not going to justify it. It's probably closer to a 2.5 to 3x for an Amazon only channel. We don't prefer
EBITDA, 2.5x on EBITDA.
EBITDA, yes, sir. Yeah. Or SDE, depending upon how you look at the valuation of the company.
Yeah.
So the end result is we are not buying at inflated numbers. And the, you know, the buyer now is really has a seat in the market. The sellers are looking at this going, okay, I can't simply just flip my business like I thought I would 18, 24 months ago. You know, the questions about full prices are off the table. It is seller to, you know, is more subservient right now to the market. We're looking at more deals for earnouts and that kind of stuff and seller financing. Yeah. And so this has changed quite a bit in some of those opportunities. And they have to be on our side of the house, multi-channel. They can't just be Amazon FBA. I know some of the aggregators only want Amazon FBA. But we want an omni-channel. We want another TikTok shop, a Shopify, some other channel, a wholesale, some other mechanism, Etsy, whatever, of market distribution beyond just Amazon, right? Love Amazon in many ways. Don't like what they've done in many ways, but who does on any platform? But I don't want that risk of a single channel. So for us, it has to be more than a million multi-channel, preferably email and customer acquisition lists. And at least 5 years or more in the marketplace with proven sales and opportunity.
Proven sales.
And definitely US based. We don't want, right now, we're not really looking international. And I don't want companies with a lot of overhead, a lot of employees or physical overhead, like some of the companies we've evaluated recently. Just too many people in the shop, too much shop in the first place. And we run a very lean system here with the way we do it. And so all of our stuff is outsourced, no many, you know, no employees and no manufacturers that are, you know, in specific locations. We've tried to just, you know, divide those locations out. We have some in the United States. We've got stuff we're looking at in Mexico, and we don't just do China. Of course, we got Vietnam and Pakistan and India and other locations.
Yeah.
So diversification of manufacturing and supply chain has been important for us and needs to be a part of that portfolio. And no, you know, physical structure buildings, if at all possible, or the ability to ramp them down if they are in place.
Anything around profitability or some of the debt structures?
Definitely more than a million in EBITDA or SDE, million and a half or more is greater. And at least, you know, that has to translate backwards into roughly 18 to 25% net profit. If they're like 10%, if they're a quick path to 15 or higher, if we see that in the opportunity, great. If it looks very plausible right up front that, you know, five or seven things we can change right out of the gate are going to work. If not, then we'll just pass. We don't want turnarounds at the end of the day. Right?
What about SKUs, like product lines, diversity?
Well, at this point, we're kind of across the board, except for electronics. We don't want those. We don't want supplements or in the mouth or on the skin. We don't want clothing lines. Those are kind of oversaturated, okay. Tough to move to market, high competition, three-letter agencies, technical issues on the manufacturing and support side. They're just complex. So we're looking for real, you know, simplicity in the product base. We want them to have more than 5 to 10 SKUs in their base sales of making up about 80% or so of their profits. Not one or two hero products that make up 80% of their profits. So no interest in that. That's too risky, right?
Of course, of course. And what about the niches that you find, you know, feasible for you guys?
You know, the kind of standards, I think, is difficult because a lot of people are looking in that space right now. So, you know, the home and kitchen, outdoor gears, and have been some of the majors. There are subsets or niches within there that we've, you know, consider, like specific type of dog breed niches. That are within products and product lines and brands that are around those, as opposed to generalized, you know, products in a pet space, let's say. Yeah. So we're looking really at the numbers. We can run and have run any of them and have clients or businesses of our own that have ran across all those spaces. So we're more going for the general bank, if you will, on profitability than a specific niche. Like we only want home and kitchen, for example. Like that's not how we're looking at it.
Yeah. And obviously you're looking at acquisition, right? Is it just Facebook ads or whatever, or there is an inbound strategy in place, right? I mean, diversity in terms of acquisition, not just
diversity and inbound marketing. Absolutely. Yeah. Channel, social media, if they've established paid traffic and media in, inbound, if they've got decent CPA, a good AOV, if they have a CLTV strategy, even better for their channels, even if they have 5% of those channels opened and they've already started the process and started the acquisition, we'll be okay with that because we're direct marketers and we can go in and take opportunity from those channels. What I don't want is to go in and have to prove or establish that secondary channel, because as you probably know, and I'm sure your listeners do, the psychology of a buyer on Amazon is very different than Shopify or TikTok or Etsy. So you can't just assume that one product moves omni-channel and will accept or be accepted in the same way by a customer purchase decision on a Shopify versus an Etsy versus TikTok shop or Amazon. They're very different.
Yeah, of course.
And so I'd love to have to see they've already established, failed, and had some success in those and kind of give us a path through versus us going in and trying to figure it out net new.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Anything else on this topic you want to add?
You know, it's interesting that people want to assume and have a lot of operating experience. And there's this idea that of people being able to buy companies with no experience and absentee ownership and this kind of stuff, or the idea that these businesses, as you and I were joking, are passive income. Or, you know, we were laughing that this is passive for somebody.
It's passive, no?
For somebody, it could be. But it's not usually that way. And if you assume it is, it's probably because you're trying to put somebody in a seat. And that doesn't necessarily mean they're the right person. It just means you're trying to put a warm body in a butt in a seat. And we would prefer to look at it from a different perspective. So, you know, from the business and anybody considering acquisitions, if you have no experience, you know, I usually tell people you need to invest in the knowing or invest in what you know. And since we've got a long history in channel building and operations around e-commerce companies, we're going to invest in e-commerce companies.
Yes.
And because we know the insides and operations of them, and we can know what questions to ask. And we know whether or not people are basically blowing smoke up our butt or whether or not they actually know what they're talking about. This is where the absentee ownership kind of falls and breaks. You know, you can trust people in their positions, but if you have not enough experience to be dangerous enough to know what to ask them, you don't know if they're going to be taking advantage of you or running the business at optimal opportunity. And when we buy, you know, stabilization is very important of the business, and transfer stabilization is important. But then, of course, we want to look at growth or continued growth if that business is growing, and we don't want to do anything to disrupt that growth by not knowing what to change or who to change in that process. And that only comes from experience. Yeah. So from that topic, I would say, you know, if you don't know, invest in knowing. If it's something you're very interested in, take the time, hire a mentor, get behind somebody, follow them, lead and understand, especially in this year and especially on Amazon. I would not recommend anybody to start an Amazon business without somebody helping them. This is no longer the way it works. Yes. There's too many challenges, too much competition. Saturation is easily avoidable on Amazon for all the myth buster people out there. The opportunity is there. I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying that most people shouldn't start an e-commerce company, especially if they are not willing to be trained and understand and learn and take the time to do it. It's not a side hustle. It's not a hobby business. So for other people who are out there pontificating on hopium mindset and dreams and make money offers and 30 days to 1 million and all this crap, Don't listen to that, guys. You're smarter than that. Don't fall for it. And don't fall for the Amazon automation stores or the Shopify automation stores or any of that nonsense. Please don't do that. It's detrimental to your health, your well-being, and your finances.
Yeah. Yeah, fully agree. So yeah. If you look at the market right now, let's say from a bird's eye view, what are the major opportunities that you see or like key trends that are shaping the industry right now? You know, it can be like not specifically on products, but probably on market opportunities, on new networks, new social networks. I mean, what do you see on the macro level that is interesting for the industry?
What I see for people really is if you're going to establish a new product line or you're in one product line area on a specific platform, you have to diversify. I will always speak about this. I've said it for many, many years. It's become more and more obvious in the market if anybody goes in, does any due diligence on it, that you must have an omnichannel strategy. If you're on Shopify, you've got to get on Amazon. It's a stability platform of confidence and buyer. You may not like it. You may think they're big brother. It doesn't matter if you're in the world of e-commerce. It's a tool you need to go use, and you need to get the spillover from the traffic that is falling over to that from any ad spend on Meta, Facebook, TikTok, or etc. is falling back to Amazon. You need that secondary channel. If you look for brand developing this year, if you're looking for new product and brand awareness and brand discoverability, you have to be on TikTok shops. Okay. It's a wild west adventure. Don't expect to not get violations or run into troubles because you just are, and they're still figuring crap out, and you're going to run into troubles. Okay. It just is going to be that way because it's wild west. But there's a huge opportunity for brand discoverability. So as we are moving new products in brands or new brands with new product lines into the market, as soon as it goes out to market validation on Amazon, we're moving it to TikTok shops because there, with affiliates and traffic, we're seeing the crossover be up to 25% right now. Brand discovery there ends up on Amazon and purchases the product.
Yeah.
So once that product starts to get an organic lift on Amazon, you fire it up on TikTok shops and boom, organic lift goes crazy over on Amazon. Mm-hmm. So you bring those two platforms of SEO and organic and then pay traffic behind it, and you got yourself a huge opportunity. Acquisitions, of course, through the buying of competition, if you want to take that on. There's a lot of people selling their businesses right now. That's a big opportunity this year for those who have cash and want to acquire and grow through acquisition. Mm-hmm. Definitely recommend you do that. It's become the year, they say, of the creator. So if you definitely are going to develop and create brands, you're going to need creators. That's one of the things I love about TikTok right now is that you can get so many creators to come and promote your products when you do it the right way.
Yeah.
Because of the way they built that platform, it's amazing to go to the affiliate center. And, you know, we have a bot that sends out 2,000 to 3,000 messages a day on our brand, and people are picking it up. And we've had some really great creators come through to create really good content. And with permission-based aspect of that platform, we can take that content and push it backwards into other channels. And it works really well on other channels for reels and media buying, et cetera. So, you know, as a bird's eye view, a 30,000 foot view from this year, you got to be on all of those channels this year.
Yeah.
However you do it, however you get it started imperfectly, get those other brand channels open.
It's not so definitely, I fully agree. Multi-channel is a huge opportunity, definitely top of mind for any brand owner, right? But it's very, very difficult to execute, right? Because we talked previously. Each channel is like a different community, right? It has its own flavors, characteristics, consumer behaviors. On a marketing side, you need to address specific communities, right? You have the YouTube community, the TikTok, the Amazon, the Shopify. Of course, it's kind of a siloed, right? Complex. But there are challenges. What are the challenges that you see, right? I mean, for implementing this multi-channel strategy, and what are the tips that you can provide to optimize that?
Well, one of the challenges we see is that, you know, it's enough effort to just run the Amazon channel, especially as you get up past seven figures into multi-seven figures on Amazon, to keep that focus and attention. So you really got to work with a team or a group that you know you can trust to bring that across to, say, TikTok shops and be able to hit the right message, get your content set up, and really look at the kind of affiliate relationships you've got to promote that product, because a lot of the heavy lifting and the mechanics of that can be promoted through the affiliate channel. Mm-hmm. You just need to make sure you're choosing the affiliates wisely. And making sure you're helping, giving them any suggestions, et cetera, for the way they promote your products, and then really just letting them do what they do best if they're really good creators on TikTok and getting that. It's not complex. It's not a terribly difficult setup, especially when you're in the United States. If you're outside the United States trying to set up a TikTok shop, that's a lot more complicated.
No, it's complicated.
You got to get an ITIN. You need to have an LLC in the United States. You need to be able to use a mobile phone or something that has a US-based SIM card, et cetera, in it. So it creates some complexities right now.
You need to put the inventory in the US. That's a must.
You need a US-based inventory, third-party logistics company, or otherwise we use Amazon and can use it as a multi-channel fulfillment. So once we do that to TikTok shops, we can revert that back to MCF. So we are taken care of in that. So it's a lot easier for Amazon brand owners to move directly to TikTok. Nice. So really what it gets down to is your listing on TikTok doesn't necessarily work the same way. So you have to change the language and copy a bit on your TikTok listing to speak to that audience and avatar who's kind of really in a pattern interrupt state, very similar to, say, Facebook or other social medias. However, with the way that they understand shops now and the way the consumers' content on TikTok are starting to understand the way that ecosystem works, it really gets down to the message. It gets down to the hook, and it gets down to the creator for your brand and product. And it only takes one of those creators to pop off and see like 50 to 100,000 in sales in 30 days. It just takes one. And once they do it and it gets viral going and the channel shows up, all the other creators start to be attracted to your brand. That's really, really powerful. Get one of those to pop off, creators get attracted. And that creates that psychology of buyer ecosystem that allows something like TikTok shops to go off pretty fast. It doesn't come down to the mechanics at that point. It really gets down to the message. And that's the one thing I want people to really understand. You know, mechanics don't make this model work. They enable the model to work. If you have a crappy brand and a crappy product, it ain't going to work. But here's the thing, Eaton, you're going to love this. So many of the products showing up on TikTok shop right now won't sell on Amazon like they did in today's world, but they would in 2014, 2015. Some of the products I'm seeing that wouldn't, you know, you were launched those on Amazon during those years, like crazy, even down to 2014. They're blowing up on TikTok right now.
Yeah.
Which I find is fascinating. Because eventually that's going to change. Like you can go down the line, open your crystal ball for a second. You know, brands and development and product types are going to mature. But right now, if you picked a product from like 2016 Amazon and put it on TikTok shop, you could probably make it successful.
Yeah. I mean, what I see that is working right on TikTok right now is probably a product which is less than $100. It's something that is, you know, you can show a real transformation of using the product within 30 seconds, right? It can be a cosmetics product or some kind of a gadget, right? That makes a lot of interest and
very emotional driven purchasing.
Exactly. And you make the decision like within 2-3 seconds, right?
That's easily. It is. Oh, this is only, you know, $24.95. Not a big deal. I can grab it. Yes. But some of this opportunity is where TikTok has set it up. Like I have a friend who has a $119 product on Amazon and he just launched it for $59 on TikTok shop, but they're subsidizing $40 of that for every purchase he makes. So the customer after shipping is paying like $24.99 for his product right now. And it's flying off the shelves. Now he's making up the difference because they're paying him.
Yeah. What is the niche of this product?
His is in the Holman kitchen space.
Yep.
And he is around 10 grand a day in sales.
Amazing.
Yeah. Amazing. It's just blown up and he's got supply chain issues right now, actually, because he's moving product as fast as he can get the ships.
Yes.
As fast as he can get them imported.
3-4 month cycles, right?
Yeah, he's getting some of it from local. He's having to pay a little bit more to get the product. But because of the way they are basically giving him free shipping through TikTok and the subsidizing the purchase of the product, right now for him, it's worth it to even air freight some of that stuff in just to get the product to move faster.
Makes sense.
It's, like I said, it's a Wild West moment. It's crazy time. So if you're an Amazon operator or even a Shopify operator, you've got to get on TikTok shop and get that going just to take opportunity and to learn the process, which will mature, advance, change, adapt, pivot as we go through the next few years, like every new market, it will. And every marketer goes in and makes trouble in every one of these platforms. And then the platforms have to adapt. It's just the same cyclical thing, right? Amazon has gone through it as well. And right now the retail arbitragers, the online arbitragers and the wholesalers in Amazon are screaming, crying, and their businesses are basically being shut down by inbound and outbound fees on Amazon because Amazon is intentionally trying to move them off the platform. I don't think people really understand what's happening. Having been in this long enough, I've been telling people for 5 years or more, you have to get into private label if you're going to stay on Amazon. If you continue with the RIOA stuff and the wholesale, they're going to eventually kick you off. The AI will catch you. The systems will get shut down. It's coming. And this is the year when it's happening. They're shutting it down. So they want to stay in a private label brand. And people have taken advantage of their system. And so now they're changing it by making it cost money. Pretty easy way to get rid of those people on the platform, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk about acquisition, right? It's getting very, very difficult. cookie deprecation, and Chrome, you know, was going to shut down cookies as well somewhere in the summer, I believe.
Yeah.
Obviously, triggering more, initiating more activities with affiliates, with influencers.
Yep.
What do you think is a, how do you optimize acquisition in 2024?
I think the ultimate thing here, and this is just coming through this, like, billions of dollars flooding into the Amazon market, really helping it mature the M&A space, which has been kind of on the cusp of, can you really sell an Amazon business? Does it have real value?
Mm-hmm.
And in the last few years, having a number of major companies exit on Amazon started platform businesses that have gone through $600 million plus exits that started on Amazon, it's kind of matured that market forward. So, you know, as we are acquiring, again, we're looking at that Amazon channel and saying, is it a good stability part of the business? And has it been around long enough? And have they been, you know, sort of trialed by fire? And with that, have they opened additional channels? So for us, we're getting to be very picky. Like, originally, we had kind of a shotgun approach to 50 plus companies. And then as we looked through the process and decided it wasn't going to work, we're now being much more strategic, much more stringent. We're going to look at maybe 5 companies this year, one of them on deck right now, that we're evaluating and getting with the owners to hopefully go to an LOI if it makes sense. Letter of intent.
Sure.
But it is being very much scrutinized at every level of the business. We're doing more diligence, which takes longer. We're looking for the gaping holes. We're evaluating market shifts and economic changes that have been very dramatic in the last few years and determining whether or not these types of business models and products will sustain any market changes of this, you know, or possible larger magnitudes. So we're doing, you know, more of that conversation, which we haven't had to have in the last, you know, 3, 4, 5 years. We're doing it now. So we are, you know, moving slowly. And if a deal doesn't work, we're okay not seeing a deal go through. We're okay with it falling out. Right. And I think that, you know, in that way, I wouldn't say we're like hyper conscious or even overly protective, because we're still willing to go out and look to buy these, you know, these businesses. But, yeah, you know, our evaluation has become, is this a product that could sustain a 2020 event? Is this a brand that could sustain that?
Yeah.
We talk, as you guys probably know who are listening to this, you know, $20,000+ per container for shipping prices.
Yes.
So we're like, okay, could this brand sustain that? You know, it's new contingency planning. It's a different world.
Mm-hmm.
So as we look forward into that, for us, more specifically, we're not buying brands with seasonality. Right.
Yep.
They are brands that have to have year by year stabilized, consistent, where there be seasons of growth in it. They are not seasonal products. That's one of the ways we're mitigating that.
And how do you look at the, on the marketing side, you know, acquiring new customers?
Yeah.
What do you see working these days? Because it's getting more and more difficult, right?
Yeah. Well, if you look at it from an Amazon perspective, one of the ways you obviously acquire is organic, like search engine, which has changed sort of dramatically, especially in the last 6 to 12 months, as Amazon has made a very conservative push to get to their 2026 goal of becoming a profitable media company that happens to sell products. And oh, by the way, it also hosts, because their AWS system is where their profit comes from now. And that's where like Prime and Amazon and all these things and Freebie all ride off of, including most of the world's on-demand infrastructure. They're now transitioning into a media distribution company. So in that process, this is what's changing in the ecosystem. So acquisition of customers has to have been or should be a prominent part of the way you look at Amazon's system. Organic, it's changed because they're now putting a lot more paid ads on the page. In some places in Amazon, the top half of the page all the way down through almost 16, 17 listings is all paid.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to pay to play on Amazon now, which means you've got to have the product profitability and the valuation of those products done correctly, and know that acquisition through PPC is going to be a mandatory requirement for certain brands and types you get into, or you got to go find those niches and where it's not. And that becomes a little bit harder to do now. So you got to do a little more due diligence on the product type, the SEO, you know, SEO organic ranking, and the PPC ability to acquire those customers, because clicks are up to $1.40 in some places, $2 in others. And you got to be able to afford those clicks, and you have to be able to dial in that content so that you can get that click to sale ratio reasonably into a position to pay for that, or your competition will do it. And that will be your loss, right? Because that is a loss in this market. So we always evaluate in what we call our green light process to determine profitability of product and do 80% of our due diligence on the market and research before we launch a test market product. Okay. And the test market's 50, 100 units. Before that happens, we'll have done our product research. We'll know our 5 to 7 competitors. We'll know, you know, their last swings in pricing variables. We'll know how long they have and what ranking they have. Well, you know, roughly how much PPC are they buying in competitors and which ones are buying more than another. And then we will, you know, look to launch our product market test into that to determine if there's space for us. Market test goes well organically. We know we have to go acquire through PPC. At that point, we are willing to acquire because what we have done initially is determine profitability above $12 in net profit per unit or higher, typically $20 to $60, mm-hmm. meaning that I'm willing to go in and spend $40 to $50 of that to acquire a customer away from you and do that until market share now becomes my opportunity. And this is what a lot of sellers are not willing to do. Either they don't know it, they're not willing to do it, or they haven't been trained by somebody who's doing it. And so they just become a victim of the market. And they wonder why they can't launch. They can't get it out in 3 or 4 or 5 months. They got to shut it down because it's not profitable. It's because we're going to go in and acquire that market because we're willing to pay. The A cost at 30%, I don't care. I care that my total A cost, my AOV, and my CLTV are dialing in at 6 and 12 months. And then I'm going to do what it takes to rank and get into that position. And if you aren't able to do that financially, Amazon's not a great place for you to get started.
And outside of Amazon, in terms of customer acquisition, what do you see?
Direct-to-consumer acquisition on the DTC side. You know, Shopify Meta ads have gone up. CPMs are up. Facebook changed. You know, they had that outage 2 weeks ago. And after that, CPMs have gone ridiculous. I don't know if it's correlation or causality or what, but CPMs have gone through the roof in many places. And a lot of the single one-hit wonder drop shippers and first customer acquisitions on single product types for brands are failing miserably because they have not done a great job of doing the follow-up. They don't know their numbers, their AOV. They don't know what a customer's worth to them to 12 months. They don't know what they can actually pay or how to, you know, set up their marketing, their SMS, put their Klaviyo in right, get their email sequences done correctly, and to really do a follow-up process and an incentive process, whether that's capturing their emails up front or giving them a cash back opportunity. I just hosted a podcast here a few months ago from a guy in Israel who has a startup that's cash back related to DTC. And it's blowing up. And you guys should go check that out because if you want to know how to really take an opportunity in your DTC Shopify that isn't just capturing emails and spinning a wheel, it's actually getting cash back for the customer's purchases. Okay.
Yes.
Not coupons. Go to my High Voltage Business podcast and check that out. It is very cool what he's doing to allow you to basically keep that money the same way a card, okay, would have money on it like it's Starbucks. And we know Starbucks is now a bank, not a coffee shop, because of how many people bought gift cards and didn't spend them, right? And that's the same premise that he's using in the DTC world. So if you're not doing those kinds of things, you're not going to be able to get that first customer acquisition in your AOV high enough in this, you know, CPMs and stuff. AdWords is always a great place, takes a lot of time to dial it in, but it's a great place in Reels. On Facebook are starting to come down quite a bit and costs are going up, but the shorts on YouTube are doing really well. And if you can get that dialed in, shorts on YouTube are doing great for cost for e-commerce and just any lead acquisition. Frankly, it's a difficult one to dial in, but once you get it right, it really has an upside potential. We ran a lot of TikTok ad both consulting and e-commerce. And I can tell you that's a fascinating world to play in because their algorithm is something else. And it's very different than the Facebook algorithm in many ways, and very similar to Amazon in many ways. So we're noticing that the TikTok shop algorithms for purchase and consumer driven link clicks or even acquisition CPA to the shop on TikTok is raising up the organic SEO value. So there's a fascinating correlation between the purchase spend and the organic ranking on TikTok shops, which we see over in the Amazon world. So there's not been many places other than Etsy where you can even do that. But Etsy's not a high volume network at the end of the day. And many people don't play on. So if you're looking for that mass media, larger marketing acquisitions, you can take an Amazon PPC campaign and see it fall backwards to TikTok and vice versa over there. And then of course, seeing that relevance in your numbers means you might be able to spend more on your DTC side, your meta ads, your AdWords, et cetera, to go out and acquire those customers. Yes. And I think a lot of people, frankly, just miss out on things like the old advertorial style clicks, the taboos and the world and other, ability traffic buying networks. They've gotten so caught up in these major corporations, they kind of forgot about some of these secondary networks with advertorials and how well those actually work. Direct consumer marketing. We've looked at the costs of a mailing campaign for 18 to 35 year olds. And believe it or not, they're the highest acquisition, best return on direct mailing campaigns.
Interesting.
Yeah. Why? If you go ask a millennial person what's going on and just get their input or just go look at the statistics, they're burnt out in the online world. They've lived in it their entire life. They're tired of being marketed to. And so when something shows up in the mail, they get excited.
Yeah.
So if you got an e-commerce product and it makes sense, direct mail your people, especially if they're in the Gen Z, they're one of the largest and fastest buying demographic of off mail, off flyers. So if you've got that market in your network and your brand can approach that, you should be marketing to those people. If you want to market and not pay for the cost, get a flyer together with a couple of like brands and get them to pay for the advertising and then throw your advertising on the 9x16 and mail it to your audience. You can do it for no cost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. So we understand that e-commerce and Amazon business is not a passive income type of thing, right? Obviously, it can be, according to you, it can be automated income. That's a new term, right?
Almost automated income.
So you even wrote a book about it, right? Tell us about the book. Yeah.
Well, in simple terms, I have a podcast, and in there I interview lots of experts, and many of them I know and have been on the show because of the criteria. They are actually doing it and verifiably good at what they do. Mm-hmm. And they had interviewed in certain parts of the different podcasts around the same way we do our playbook inside of Voltage. And so in that conversation, each of those basically became a chapter, and there's 15 different experts being interviewed in that chapter process. And I compiled it together. And put it in such a way that it follows our playbook. It follows the building and what the heck to actually sell and ways to adapt and determine product sellability. Of course, it goes by the profit. So there's chapters in there talking about business development process and financing and finding profitable and making sure you understand your P&L and the business numbers and the fundamentals of real business. And then we talk about brandability. So I've got experts in there speaking to brand variation, brand type, on and off Amazon branding and what it means to develop a brand beyond Amazon, not just Amazon brand products and businesses. And we talk about the technology and the development of it and the sourcing. And so I've got experts on there talking about tracking and PPC for Amazon and making sure you can do your customer acquisition across omni-channels. And so we talk about how that system and ecosystem works for organic and PPC. And then I have experts in there talking about the acquisitions of the businesses, the exits of the business, the principality of building the business with the end in mind. And we talk really about, you know, building these companies being worth more in the end than at any time during the business building phase and what that actually means to somebody who gets involved in building one of these companies or is building one and should be considering the valuation of its exit. So those experts are compiled into the book, and we talk about ways to use systems and people and technology to create that almost automated income. And we start on FBA because it is a large market share in the United States. Sure. It is kind of the de facto selling. And if you can get it to prove in that mass market and you can get people to adapt your brand and build and grow organically, you can then take that audience and understand, change the psychology of the buyer, know that they're also on these other platforms and then move it out. Doing the right way with operators, systems, and AI and dashboards and third-party logistics companies and Amazon FBA itself and their warehouse distribution and network. I don't need warehouses and people to do it. So much of this can be almost automated with the FBA system and the operators behind it. And that's the principle of the book.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So for new entrepreneurs or brand owners who want to kick off a new business these days, what do you recommend? Start with your own domain, Shopify, whatever, or FBA, or start with Amazon or even, or maybe TikTok?
Yeah, great question. Well, if you are wanting to get started and your background is not in marketing, then don't start on a DTC channel. If you don't understand the words AOV, CLTV, if you don't know what a conversion rate is, don't start in the direct-to-consumer market. If you've never started a Facebook campaign, never tried to run an AdWords account, if you've never done any of those things, the learning curve there is going to be very difficult to find eyeballs for your offer and get customer acquisition, the primary point of all business, and that sales fixes everything. So if you are going to get started and brand new, don't know how to read a P&L, but want to get started in business and want to attract customers that'll actually see and buy your product, then go to somewhere like Amazon first. With Amazon FBA, you know there's buyers, 150 million of them. What you need to learn at this point is how to attract those buyers and how the system works to attract buyers and realize that it's a multi-tested billion dollar split-tested funnel that you don't have to worry about a lot of that technology. So where does it, you know, where do you learn your purpose and the business development part of running the business and the direct marketing of a consumer or avatar, which is more easily taught to beginners, in my experience, than trying to teach them marketing, Facebook, and direct-to-consumer narrative marketing, which many people don't get. very complicated, really, yes. at the end of the day. So I find newbies to be able to get started in new business on Amazon FBA first. Doesn't mean you won't go to other channels. It's just a great place to get wet. We incubate, basically, in that learning curve, and it gives them an opportunity to grow first. If you have experience in marketing and direct marketing background, and you've ran any kind of ads or traffic, and you understand that, it might be better for you to go over to the DTC channel and Shopify world first and find those products, dial in that audience and conversation, and see that opportunity grow. Put it into TikTok shops as fast as you can, because it's just stupid simple to get other people to promote your product.
Yeah. Great, Neil. So on a personal level, what are the probably some of the key lessons that you can share with us from your career?
I am not immune to failure. I have inadvertently failed in a marriage by being a dumb, arrogant young prick who, you know, I take 50% responsibility in the destruction of my first marriage, which was a tough learning curve. Don't recommend that. So I, you know, I would try to avoid that if possible. That was a learning curve. I have had very good highs in business and I've had very good lows. I've had gotten too far involved in some technology and stuff and forcibly had to go through a business bankruptcy in order to kind of indemnify the troubles and challenges and sort of restart myself from that perspective. Another boundary I had to push to see where life would lead me. And I guess at the end of the day, my lesson in learning versus institutional knowledge and theory is just full application without fear of failure. Keep taking those shots. If you keep failing enough, something's going to go through the net. Learn from that. Understand what you did right and just do your best to repeat what was done right in that process. That's the best learning experience to knowledge. And from knowledge with that becomes the opportunity to meet networks of people. You know, it's who you know that gets you there and what you know that keeps you there. So with that experience, you should be able to open the knowledge networks. And at some point, you might be seen as wise, not just because you have a check mark or a box, because you have some experience under your belt and can speak to things you actually know about. And stay in your lane, because at the end of the day, success is boring. And if you're kind of bored in what you're doing, it's probably because you're successful at it finally. So find new ways to invent and have fun in what you do and fail at those things quickly. The faster you fail, the faster you're going to succeed. Just put on the expectation hat that you're going to fail and that failure is not object failure, okay, or abject failure. It is just a step in the learning process of gaining experience. And if you truly can like grasp that, then whether you're at a 95 and you're clinging to that right now and you're trying to figure out where to go, or whether you made the jump and trying to figure out, is this going to keep working? Do I need to keep doing this? Is it ever going to see success? It will be there for those who treat it like a marathon, not those who treat it like a sprint. Mm-hmm. And if you can do that, sustain it, then you will have the opportunity to get and grow. And that's the team aspect of this business model, the time, energy, attention, and money, which is the last part of the answer to this question. If you think you can start with 5,000 or 10,000, triple that. Mm-hmm. Triple it or double it, and then think about starting. You can do a side hustle opportunity with an expectation of growing it into a full time, but never mentally treat it like a side hustle, or it will always stay like a side hustle.
Yeah. It's like it usually takes like two times the money and three times the time that you planned originally, right? So you need to...
It is very true.
Yeah.
It takes a long time to really figure it out.
Much more money than you planned initially, right? So,
and the last thing for me was when I really got the first 3 to 5 years under my belt when I left IBM and realizing there's a very big difference between in the corporate world protection and being on your own and owning everything and managing all the risk that comes with it. I thought I could take that on. I didn't think of that complex. And when I finally woke up to that, I went and hired a mentor.
Exactly.
And the mentor changed so much about my, I wouldn't be sitting here today with the three people I've hired over this 17 years to be my mentors and to be involved in their network and their relationship and their skill. I wouldn't be here 17 years later if it wasn't for them. I would have basically crashed and burned and had to go back and get a job.
Yeah.
Yep.
Great, Neil. Thank you for sharing that. And this is a part of the episode where I ask you about a fun fact about yourself.
Okay.
That probably most people don't know about you.
Let's see. When I was a young, stupid man on a business trip one time in a South American country, let's say, I may or may not have gotten into a bar fight at 3 a.m. and I may or may not have allegedly ran from the police and escaped into a Kentucky Fried Chicken to avoid arrest. Allegedly. Allegedly. Okay. I don't think a lot of people know that about me.
Okay, good. Thanks. Thank you for that.
Yep.
Right, Neil, anything else you want to add?
No, I'm honored to be here. I appreciate your time, Aiden. Thank you for letting me join you and for just having some good time to chat here.
Amazing. Really a pleasure. Very, very interesting. Wish you all the best and amazing year.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye. Thank you for joining us on this episode. Your support means the world to us. If today's episode has been insightful for you, consider sharing it with someone who would also benefit. Even one share can make a big difference. Looking to elevate your e-commerce game? Discover Vimi, a multi-channel e-commerce platform that will transform your business with the power of shoppable video. Visit us at vimi.net to learn more. It's Vimi, V-I-M-M-I.net. Thank you for being part of our journey. Stay tuned for more invaluable insights in our next episode.